First of all, I would like to apologize for these problems, technical problems. And secondly, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to present here some recent results based on a rather older methodology, which we continually develop for the last couple of years. The title of my talk is Coherent Control. So now I'm trying to control some intramolecular energy transfer. And I'm trying to do that on a molecule, but a large molecule like pyrazine, by doing a full dimensional quantum dynamics study on this molecule. Co-authors of this work are Chuan Li and Paul Brummer and Moshe Shapiro. And I'm Ioannis Thanopoulos, and I'm located in Athens, Greece, the National Hellenic Research Foundation. So here is the outline of my talk. First of all, I will try to show you a few steps how we develop quantum dynamics by partition technique in the time domain. And then I will try to go fast through the dynamics of the radiational transitions between the second singlet excited state of the pyrazine molecules to the first singlet excited state of this molecule. And then on the last and perhaps most important part of my talk, I will try to show you how we try to control the dynamics from the ground excited state to the second singlet excited states, and then subsequent dynamics to the first singlet excited states in pyrazine by treating the whole problem non-perturbatively within laser pulses driving the S0 to S2 excitation. So the first part, as I said, is quantum dynamics by partition technique in the time domain. So what is the idea here? The idea is that, let's say I have, in a formal way, I can say I have a Hamiltonian, which I can write as sum, direct sum of three spaces, subspace Q1, subspace Q2, and subspace P. The difference between these subspaces is the following. The Q1 subspace and the Q2 subspace are rather small. That means they include a not too large number of eigenstates. And this is the interesting part for my studies. And then I have a subspace P, which is huge. That means it includes a large number of eigenstates. This is actually not the interesting part for me. In principle, I could also see what happens here, but let's leave it at the moment that I'm interested only in the Q1 and the Q2 subspaces. As you realize, why I'm studying or I'm trying to develop such a methodology is the idea to try to have some kind of dynamics, methods for dynamics on systems with many degrees of freedom. The many degrees of freedom play a crucial role here by having that very large space P. So I use a wave function approach. That means I have to solve the Schrödinger equation. And how do that? I do that by writing, first of all, the wave function as superposition of eigenstates in the Q1 space, eigenstates in the Q2 space, and then eigenstates in the P space, which I write in a continuous, let's say, manner. This is a continuum or a quasi-continuum in principle due to the large number of eigenstates. And so I write them like continuum states. And now, of course, these eigenstates of the different spaces fulfill the time-independent Schrödinger equations here and here. And the point is that I have also, I allow for interactions, of course, between Q1 and Q2 and Q2 and the P space. As an example, I can write down the Hamiltonian in such a form. I have, let's say, the interaction free Hamiltonian for Q1, interaction free Hamiltonian for Q2, interaction free Hamiltonian for P. And then I have interaction Hamiltonian between Q1 and Q2 and interaction Hamiltonian between Q2 and P. For the example, Q1 and Q2 are defined as the interesting part of my space. For example, let's say in the case of pyrazine, you will see that Q1 is the ground state. It includes just only the very ground vibrational state. And Q2 is the vibrational manifold of this S2 singlet electronic states. These two are states, why I'm interested in that, because I excite with laser from Q1 to Q2, and I want to see how the population in Q2 dies out, even or if I can control that by having it longer there, and or how much I can make that comes finally to P. So I choose them simply because these are defined by my interest in the problem. Now, going back to this Hamiltonian, trying to make a contact to the problem that I will treat in a while, I can think of this interaction Hamiltonian as a laser pulse. So I have a laser pulse with epsilon electric field, and then I have electric dipole matrix elements coupling the eigenstates in the Q1 and Q2 space. And then for the interaction part between Q2 and P, I can think of a time-independent interaction defined by such matrix elements. In our case, it will be radiational transitions between the two singlet excited states in pyrazine. So now if I plug in the wave function I had in the original spherical equation, I end up with differential equations for the coefficients. For the coefficients of the Q1 and Q2 eigenstates, here are written the equations. The difference between them are that the eigenstates that are in Q2 are at the same time coupled to Q1 and also at the P space. And the coupling to the P space comes from such a non-Markovian term, if you wish, where one has the correlation function between the Q2 and the P space. The correlation function is actually defined here. It's practically the sum over the matrix elements between Q2 and P for different eigenstates in the Q2 space, here named K and J, and of course integrated over the whole energy span of these two spaces. This system, as you see, actually defines a system of several integral differential equations. This is due to this part. The problem is that as the number of states in Q1 and Q2 grows, the numerical solution of these differential equations becomes tricky and difficult to achieve. So it would be very nice if we have the possibility to transform the system of Q integral differential equations to a larger system of ordinary differential equations. In that sense, we will practically, numerically, if you wish, go from solution of integral differential equations to diagonalization of a general complex matrix. So the point is how we can do that. We can do that by expanding the correlation functions in exponential terms. In this way, we introduce frequencies which actually we can call effective modes in the P space, and these frequencies now correspond to some mathematical variables which transform the original integral differential equations in this new set of ordinary differential equations, and in this respect, we can actually write the problem in a matrix form and then use standard methods to propagate it by such a formula. It turns out that in our particular problem, we use the left eigenvectors of the matrix H, which describe these ordinary differential equations. It turns out also that this matrix H has a particular block form, which it's of the arrow type for people that they work with these problems. And this allows us actually to devise a very fast propagation scheme for this problem. The very fast propagation scheme relies on three steps. The first step is that up to now we have empirically observed that this matrix H, the full matrix of the problem, possesses non-trivial eigenvalues and trivial. By trivial, I mean equal to gamma, where gamma was actually this fitting parameter here. In my case, it would be actually zero because I can fit without having that at all. So in that sense, I have my matrix possesses nb1 plus 2 times nb2. nb1 is the number of states in the q1 space, and nb2 is the number of states in the q2 space. So this is a small number, relatively. It can be several hundreds, but never could be thousands or hundreds of thousands. So we have these eigenstates which are non-trivial, and the rest are trivial. If this is gamma 0, that means they will be eigenvalues 0. So we can empirically observe that this finding. So one can just diagonalize a transform matrix for only these non-trivial eigenvalues. The problem, the diagonalization, which actually what we really want is just to find only the eigenvalues and not even the eigenvectors of this, can be done numerically with standard subroutines without any time, any real cost in computation, and then use analytical properties that have to do with the fact that this matrix is of arrow type to construct all eigenvectors of the system. And since it's analytic, it can be done very fast. We don't have to use numerics for that. And then we can construct this U matrix at each time step and propagate within this form. Okay, so this is actually, in short, the methodology that we have developed. The first part, I want to say that the transformation from integral differential equation to ordinary differential equation is something that in several aspects it was known before. It's nothing really new here. The new part is actually this effective scheme of calculating this problem, because without this effective scheme, the computation becomes so much time consuming that actually we do not gain that much at the end just by the formalism. Now I will try to review fast the properties of the radiational transition between the S2, S1 electronic states in pyrazine, which set actually the stage for the full problem I will come to later. The S1 the S2 singlet state includes 176 vibrational states. And the S1 state in pyrazine includes within our treatment about 12.5 million vibrational states. These states can be calculated exactly because we know the Hamiltonian of this problem, the Hamiltonian that actually describes the time-dependent radiational transition between these two spaces. And as you see, any direct approach will, of course, crash on the number of states in this manifold. But we can do that. And how can we do that? Now, in brief, I will say to you that we calculate the correlation functions, as I said before. Here we are using some tricks by coarse graining, which speed up this kind of calculation. We can test how well we can this coarse graining performs with respect to the time we are interested in, and of course I can write them, as I said, as a sum of exponential terms. And again, how many exponential terms I need depends on the time of dynamics I'm interested in. And here there are some tests showing that 120 exponential factors are very good, up to 100 femtoseconds, which is actually the time that I'm looking at here, since this decay is very fast. And here are tests, comparison with older previous work, and we have excellent agreement. Here is a decay of different initial states in the S2 vibrational manifold for different energies. You see most of them decay within 20 and 30 femtoseconds. There are, of course, a few that they decay slower, and I come back to this by showing you a plot where is plotted the decay time here versus the energy of the vibrational state in the S2 manifold. You see that as we go from lower to higher, the decay is always within 20 or 30 femtoseconds. However, as we go higher, there are there are islands of states here and here, and a little bit more high in energy, where they decay slower. We are confident that this is actually a converse calculation within this energy range we are talking about, because we are talking about 4.3 EV to 4.89 EV, while the range of energy where these states decay goes well over this energy range. So in that sense, it's something interesting. We found that there are exit states higher in energy that perhaps they live longer than the states that are lower in energy. On the other hand, these states can be very good candidates if we want to prolong the lifetime of the population in the S2 manifold by trying to address this stage with a laser, and then see what happens. And this is exactly what we are investigating here. We are trying to treat two color control of the whole process non-perturbatively with the methodology I devised before. Here is now the new problem. S0 is the ground electronic state. S2 are these 170 vibrational states in the S2 electronic surface, and S1 is, as before, these 12.5 million vibrational states on the S1 electronic state. Here we have radiational transitions, what I was just talking a couple of slides ago, and here is a new element, it's the pulse laser that connects these two, and for that part we use the Frank-Compton factors between the S0 and S2 surface as the electric dipole matrix element for this process. As a first study, we want to see what happens if we apply a very short pulse of 10 femtosecond duration. The intensity is 4 terawatt per square centimeter. Here you see the pulse profile. Here I plot as function of time the population, the total population in the S2 surface for different excitation frequencies. As you see, more or less, most of them, they excite within 5% of difference. So the excitation is not very selective. In general, it's even not a very strong excitation. Only 10% of the initial population is excited. This is not selective because it's such a short pulse. We have such a broadband pulse.